Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yoz, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. Thank you for joining us for our first of 2 hours on this rainy Tuesday. Support for WEAA traffic and MTA report is provided by ADT. More information available at ADT.com. Coming up in the second hour of the show, we'll be joined by our friends from the Maryland Film Festival, but specifically the Parkway Theater, talking about the new films that are going to be this Thursday at the Parkway. Don't have my notes in front of me, unfortunately, but we'll be talking to Eric Hatcher of the Parkway Theater about new films, including the Rat film that is coming up and the film Davion as well. Two films that we'll be talking about. Eric Hatch, director of programming and a Baltimore filmmaker, talking about the film, the 2017 film Davion, as well as a preview of the Rat film, which premiered, I believe, this year at the Maryland Film Festival. Really fascinating film from what I'm told. I didn't get to see it, but looking forward to that conversation with Eric Hatch from the Parkway Theater and the Maryland Film Festival, as we always do. Also, another film we're going to be talking about, The Legend of Kung Funk, which is filming in the Baltimore area. Brother Marco Johnson, he's a martial arts instructor, filmmaker, and actor from Baltimore, I believe, at least from the area. We'll be talking to him about this new film that's being filmed in the area called The Legend of Kung Funk. Always look forward to the avant-garde films that we embrace on First Edition. We'll be getting into film in a big way in the second hour of the show. A little bit later in this first hour, this conversation I'm very much looking forward to as well. Minister Louis Farrakhan, in a recent video, says in this video, it's during an appearance that he had. I don't have it in front of me exactly where he was, the event where he was, but I believe it was at a church. He proclaims, he embraces Jesus as his redeemer. We're going to play sound from that appearance of the Minister Farrakhan, 84-year-old Minister Louis Farrakhan, leader of the Nation of Islam for decades. And we'll play some other sound of Minister Farrakhan making similar claims in an earlier appearance. But we'll also be joined by Minister Carlos Muhammad to talk about what has transpired as far as what Minister Farrakhan says. What does it mean? And we'll open the phone lines as well to get your insights, your thoughts, your opinions about what Minister Louis Farrakhan recently said as far as proclaiming, embracing Jesus as his redeemer. We'll play the sound. And like I said, we'll have Minister Carlos Muhammad with us as well, so that we can, you know, make it as plain as possible, as the minister would say, make it plain. We're going to make it as plain as possible, and we'll talk about it coming up a little bit later in our first hour. But before we get to Minister Louis Farrakhan, Luke Broadwater of the Baltimore Sun is here with us by phone to report on a meeting that happened today between Governor Larry Hogan and criminal justice leaders in the city, talking about Baltimore's tragically soaring homicide rate. Luke, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm all right. So let's just start from the top. Governor Hogan, I believe, had tried to call a meeting, was it last week? And it didn't go too well? Am I misstating?
That's right. So earlier this month, the governor sent a letter to all the members of the Criminal Justice Community Coordinating Council in Baltimore, asking them all to attend a meeting in his Baltimore office. And he so that's people from prosecutors to judges to the police to parole and probation, et cetera. In doing this, he said in an interview with me, actually, that his purpose was to ask the judges directly why there were so many suspended sentences in Baltimore. And he used a police department statistic that 60% of sentence of gun offenders in Baltimore have more than half of their sentence suspended. Wow. Now, the judges heard this, and they said they weren't coming.
I can imagine why.
And so the chief judge of Maryland, Judge Barbera, wrote a letter on behalf of the city judges and said, basically, it's inappropriate for them to attend this meeting, that judges have to be impartial. And not only do they have to be impartial, but they have to be perceived as impartial.
Right.
And if so, if they are at meetings where they're, in her view, being pressured to give longer sentences and hold people in jail longer, then that would be inappropriate. So the three judges that are on the council did not attend today. Governor Hogan gave them a tongue-lashing afterwards, and he said that everyone at the meeting wanted the judges to be there to answer the questions that he was going to pose to them. But then Attorney General Brian Frosch came out and said that that wasn't true, that only Hogan had spoken about that and that no one else had spoken against the judges. So, so that's where we are.
Wow. So few things to unpack. And before I we continue on, Luke, let me remind listeners to make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 88.9. And don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM. Go to WEAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition, or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yoes. That is my name, S-E-A-N-Y-O-E-S. Or go to my Facebook page. If you have information, insight, or breaking news you want to share with me, I'll share with the people, unless you don't want me to, and of course I won't. Now back to Luke Broward of the Baltimore Sun, discussing this meeting today between Governor Larry Hogan and members of the criminal justice leaders, city criminal justice leaders. So first, Luke, it seems like, I mean, the governor is a smart man, and he seems well-informed usually, and he's surrounded by well-informed, savvy people. Why would he think that judges would be willing to attend a meeting where it's been broadcast, or it's been broadcast that they are going to be at the receiving end of admonishment, if you will, from the governor about their sentencing of gun offenders?
Well, in his view, he thought they would come because they sit on this council already. So he thought this was an easy way. I think, you know, reading between the lines here, he wanted to have this meeting with judges and prosecutors. He probably asked around about how can we get these guys in here, and was informed that there is a criminal justice coordinating council already in Baltimore. There's three judges on it. There's prosecutors sit on it. Police sit on it. Politicians sit on it. You, Governor, in fact, sit on it, but you send a representative. Why don't you just convene this meeting, which has three judges on it, and you can ask your questions to the judges then? So he probably thought that they would have to come because they're a part of the council. Where it's different in the chief judge's mind is typically at those meetings, judges talk about procedure. You know, is the court operating correctly? Are people waiting too long for their trials? Are we overburdened by caseloads? Things like that. Mm-hmm. They're not talking about their decision making. They're not talking about whether or not I should throw the book at somebody or cut somebody a break. So that's the key difference in the judge's mind. You know, I think a lot of people are questioning how much of this meeting was politics right. and how much was problem solving. For instance, the meeting was closed to the public. Mm. Now, Councilman Brandon Scott, the chair of the Public Safety Committee, and State Senator Bill Ferguson tried to attend the meeting and were turned away.
So, okay.
Yeah, so they were both very angered by that and upset. Bill Ferguson said he's never been kicked out of a state office building before, and that, in his view, the governor needs to respect the legislature and not kick these people out. Ben Jealous, who's running for governor right. as a Democrat, was outside, and he was calling on the governor to open up the meeting as well. Right. In his view, the governor should meet with the citizens of Baltimore and not meet in secret in a downtown office building if he really wants to solve some of the problems. In Hogan's view, having the meeting behind closed doors was, in his argument, to make it so it wasn't political. He said he didn't want people grandstanding and giving speeches for the cameras. He wanted actually to try to solve some problems. So, you know, it depends on who you are. People that were in the meeting, Brian Frost, the Attorney General, said he, in his view, it should have been open to the public. Mayor Catherine Pugh, however, sided with the governor and said, I don't mind it being closed. My bigger concern is the gun violence and how do we solve that. There was quite a bit of argument about whether this was just a political stunt or whether it was actually an attempt to solve some problems.
We'll unpack that a little bit more. But first, let me remind listeners that they're listening. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yost, your host, editor of the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. I'm on the phone with Luke Broadwater, reporter for the Baltimore Sun, who's reporting on today's meeting between Governor Larry Hogan and city criminal justice leaders discussing the city's rising homicide rate on pace, unfortunately, to set yet another record in our city. Luke, from what you just described, I mean, given the fact that 2018 is on the very near horizon politically, it seems like there are a few people trying to get, for lack of a better term, get cute as far as this meeting was concerned. It could have been open, but then, you know, to suggest that it is not politics seems naive, I would say, on people's part to make that sort of suggestion.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, Ben Jealous, his point was, you know, Baltimore's murder rate has been above 300 for 2 years in a row now, and we're headed for a third year. Where was this meeting in 2015? Where was this meeting in 2016? Why does the governor care now? Well, next year's the election.
Right.
So that's his point of view. One might say, well, where was Mr. Jealous a year ago or 2 years ago, too? So you can, perhaps that cuts both ways. But after the meeting, the governor did come out and say that he has plans to introduce a, quote, major crime package during next year's General Assembly session. And he says this will include truth in sentencing legislation. Now, typically what this has meant in other states is the elimination of parole and the elimination of good time credits, which are both things that prison officials typically really like because they help with inmate behavior. If in the view of prison officials, if you have no incentive for people to get out early from good behavior, then that increases fights, that increases attacks on guards, things like that. In the governor's view, too many people are getting out too quickly, and violent offenders are allowed to to come back on the streets too quickly. I will say that he provided no details about what this legislation will be, and his spokesman told me that it's just an idea right now, and there's no legislation actually drafted. So I don't know exactly what it will say, but if it is like the laws in other states, it could mean the elimination of the good time credits.
Which seems like a more conservative position than this governor has taken recently on different issues.
It's a very conservative position. In fact, I was researching it some, and the man who authored the policy paper in favor of it from the Heritage Foundation is now a high-ranking officer in the Trump administration. That's definitely a conservative point of view on criminal justice. It was funny because I asked the Attorney General, Brian Frosch, what he thought of this proposal and when the governor brought it up in the meeting. And he said that the governor did not bring it up in the meeting and only told it to reporters afterwards. And he also said that he felt it was good that the judges didn't attend, that it would be not proper for them to be there, and perhaps that would cause their impartiality to be questioned.
Indeed. As we stand at 231 homicides as of today, Luke, was there any specific talk, any specific discussion about somehow trying to cut down or trying to deter homicides, violence in our city in 2017?
Well, so the governor had his proposal for truth in sentencing. Marilyn Mosby, the state's attorney, and the acting U.S. attorney, a gentleman who I just met for the first time named Stephen Schenning, they said that Ms. Mosby was going to have two prosecutors given special powers to prosecute cases federally. Those were the two main things I heard, that and we all need to work together more and work together better. The police commissioner, Kevin Davis, did say we do need tougher sentencing in his view, but we also need to address the holistic nature of crime, improving education, improving housing, improving the situation with poverty and the economy. So he talked about some of the long-term problems as well. But yeah, I didn't hear anything other than maybe the prosecutors going federal. I didn't hear anything really immediate that was being done differently.
So I'll let you go on this, Luke. So the larger names, the more recognizable names, Marilyn Mosby, Brian Frosch, Kevin Davis, who else was that at this meeting?
Mayor Pugh, Jack Young was there. Okay. He declined to talk to reporters afterwards. Those were the big names I saw, and the U.S. attorney. We know the judges were not there. We know Brandon Scott was turned away. We know Bill Ferguson was turned away. Those were the people who were there today.
Okay. Luke Broadwater is a reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Luke, we thank you for giving us some insight on this meeting today that took place. We appreciate your time, as always.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Let's take a couple of phone calls now. Let's go to Brother Leo Burroughs first in Bolton Hill. Brother Burroughs, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Good evening, Brother Sean Yost.
Good evening, brother.
How you doing?
All right.
Well, the governor is engaging, as are others, in political theatrics. I mean, we know what the judges are and are not doing because we pay their salaries. We would remind the governor that we pay his salary. This is a government of, for, and by the people. And when you seek solutions to public problems, you involve the public in decision-making, and you don't have closed-door meetings of any type and kind in this serious situation that we're faced with right now. Right. So I still say the governor and the Mike Millers and the Mike Bushes and the mayor and all these people, legislative black caucus notwithstanding, are engaging in political theatrics, Democrats versus Republicans, but we're not getting a town hall meeting of community organizations, grassroots community organizations that can substantively answer the questions that they're seeking.
Okay.
And so we got to get them on the ball and let them know that this is a government of, for, and by the people.
All right, Brother Burroughs, thank you for your time. We appreciate it, as always. Let's go to Oscar in Baltimore. Oscar's next. Oscar, you're in First Edition. How you doing?
Fine. How you doing, Sean?
I'm all right.
Okay. Present company excluded.
Okay.
The governor is he's a good politician. I don't agree with him about anything, but he's a good politician because Black Negro Radio in the city,
Black
I
Negro
say present
Radio.
Company excluded.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I'm pushing him.
Well,
and they say, oh, there's no question about it.
Okay.
They said, this is the way. Now, you know you're going to have a tough election because you won the last time because you ran against a Black person.
Mm-hmm.
Running against any white Democrat, Hogan is going to have a big, he's going to have trouble. But if you come into the city, say you're really concerned about crime, like the board water said, where was this concern 2 or 3 years ago? So now they told him how to come in and fool Black people. Now he can't run it again. And then the next time, if he gets elected, mark my word, August 29th, then Hogan's going to show his real self because he is a Republican. And the people come on the air and say, well, the Republicans on the state level is different from Republicans on the federal national. That is so silly. Yeah. You don't just jump up on the national level and become a Republican. He's a Republican now, and he's going to be one. He's going to show you that he's one once he get elected. So how are you going to turn the man away who's the chair of the crime committee in the Senate? How are you going to turn him away?
Yeah, Black Negro Radio. That's interesting.
That's what it is, Black Negro Radio.
Whoa, all right, Oscar, thank you. Let me go to Mark quickly in Baltimore City. Mark, you're on First Edition. What's happening?
Hey, Sean, how you doing?
I'm all right, man.
I just have a comment. I'm hearing all this discussion about these remedies or so-called remedies and whatnot, but I didn't hear anything or I haven't heard anything about going after the gun runners. Because from my perspective, these guns don't materialize out of thin air. Somebody's selling them out here in the streets.
Yeah.
And if you reduce the supply, then, you know, the incidence of gun violence, I believe, will decrease.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that?
I mean, you never hear that conversation. Very rarely do you hear that conversation, Mark, about, you know, how the guns get into the city in the first place and what can we do about it. That doesn't seem like a conversation that is profitable to the people who are in positions of power, obviously. And so I'd have to agree with you on that, Mark. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. And I appreciate all the calls, as always. Also appreciate our friend Luke Broadwater of the Baltimore Sun for giving us the report on that meeting, helping us unpack that situation. We appreciate you, Luke, as always. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Minister Carlos Muhammad about this proclamation made during a video of an event where Minister Louis Farrakhan proclaimed that Jesus is his redeemer. So we'll get into that conversation with Minister Carlos Muhammad, and we'll open the phone lines a little bit later as well. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition. To the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam, who recently declared during an event, and we're going to play the sound from it, that Jesus is his redeemer, caught a lot of people off guard when he made these comments recently. And to talk about it is one of the strongest brothers, one of the strongest leaders in the city, Brother Minister Carlos Muhammad. He is Baltimore representative of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam. Minister Carlos, always a pleasure, man. Always good to hear your voice.
Hey, peace and blessings, Sean. And it's always a pleasure to be invited. But of course, I'm already a fan of your show, and I'm very, very honored to be on such a distinguished show who brings us great, great information on
all
levels.
Bless you, brother. And you know it's a mutual admiration society.
Yes, sir.
And I want to start off by saying this first and foremost. Let me make it abundantly plain. I love Minister Farrakhan.
Yes, sir.
And you were there the first time, and the only time I ever had a personal meeting with him was, I believe, Mr. Carlos, it was during the Million Woman March. I'm a little fuzzy.
Million Family.
Yes, sir. Million Family March. And so when I was introduced to him, C4 said, you know, this is a strong brother of the Afro newspaper. And Minister Farrakhan immediately jumped right into his reminiscence, his memories of reading the Afro as a young boy, and how it helped fortify him in his identity growing up. And then I sat during the meeting when he was preaching, and I'm gonna tell you, and I've said this, I've told this story 1,000 times, Minister Carlos, mm-hmm. I've never heard any man, any black man, ever speak more lovingly about the relationship between black men and black women ever to this day.
That's right.
He said so profoundly, when a black man finds the woman that God created for him, it's like he found his piece of heaven on earth. I'll never forget those words.
Come on now.
Hey, man. And I said, man, this cat is dynamite, man. I mean, and I never forgot that. And I've always, I may not have agreed with everything that Minister Farrakhan has ever said, but I don't agree with what any man always says 100% of the time. So I say that to say 100%. This is no gotcha interview. This is what it's not about that at all. I come forward with love for the minister and for you, of course.
Yes.
And I just want to people were startled.
Yeah.
When they heard this event or this sound from this event where the minister made this proclamation. So,
well, let me say this before you get to your clip.
Yes, sir.
I have been blessed to be with the minister now for 27 years of my life, 24 of them as his minister, his young minister at that time of 20 years of age, to put over his mosque here in Baltimore, and it's an honor. And since 1979, Minister Farrakhan has been on this prestigious station that we're talking on right now.
Mm.
It's the longest-running radio station that his voice has been on consistently.
Wow.
God willing, in a few weeks, Brother Sean, we will have our beloved minister on that airwaves of the Final Call show that appears on this beautiful station. And when we asked him and he agreed, as God is my witness, I thought of you.
Bless you, man.
And I said that there's no way that we could have the minister come on the Final Call and I not invite Brother Sean to come on as a fellow colleague of WEAA to ask the minister certain questions that may come to your mind as a journalist, that we may have a well-rounded show to talk to the issues of the day. Brother Faraji, I tell you. I said, so when it happens, I said, I want us to reach out to Brother Sean because I want him to be in the studio with us that night as the minister, God willing, will call in and have him a part of that show to ask the minister questions that he may feel are relevant to our community, relevant to our city in course of the crisis that we face today. So I just wanted to say that openly over the air.
dear brother, you know I will be there 100%.
Yes, sir.
There's no way I would miss it.
Yes,
so
sir.
I appreciate that tremendously, Minister Carlos, the opportunity to sit down and be a part of that conversation, of course.
Yes, sir. But go right ahead.
Let's just play this sound, and then we'll just talk about it on another side, Minister Carlos.
Yes, sir. I got you.
I thank God for guiding me. For 40 years absent my teacher, so my next journey will have to answer the question.
Come on.
I'm gonna say it. I know that my Redeemer liveth. I know, I'm not guessing, that my Jesus is alive. I know that my Redeemer liveth, and because he lives,
yes, sir,
I know that I too will pass through the portal of death, yet death will not afflict me. So I say to the devil, I know I gotta pay a price for what I've been teaching all these years. You can have the money, you can have the clothes, you can have the suit, you can have the house, but me, you can't have.
So that was what that was the event. I believe it was at a church, a Baptist church, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that was on July 30th, mm-hmm. 2017, mm-hmm. at Willie Wilson's Union Temple Baptist Church. Who Pastor Willie Wilson has invited Minister Farrakhan there every year since 1977, and so the minister was making his circuit again, mm-hmm. annual circuit, mm-hmm. During the pastor celebration. And so it's not strange that he's speaking from that pulpit, because he's been speaking from that pulpit since 1977.
Yes, sir. And,
yes, sir.
And also, I mean, it's not strange that within the context of the nation, mm-hmm. the minister and other ministers, Minister Farrakhan, there's an embrace of scripture.
Yes.
Whatever facet of Islam that you embrace, mm-hmm. At the very least, Jesus is upheld as a respected prophet.
Yes.
So it's not, when I heard what was said, I didn't fall out of my chair.
Yeah.
So the one of the points of having this conversation with you in particular is just to help help me understand when the minister said, I know that my Redeemer liveth, mm-hmm. and he said further, he said, I've got to pay a price for what I've been teaching all these years.
Well, let's bring context, Brother Sean.
Yes, sir.
I think, and I know, it's a very beautiful clip. However, if we don't hear what led up to why he said it,
yes, sir,
then as you know, in media, and especially in today's world with social media and the way that we can on the fly create situations and let it ride, mm-hmm. and leave it on the impression of people. And again, Minister Farrakhan has never been short of controversy now.
No, sir.
So let's look at the context of what the minister said. He said, my Redeemer liveth.
Right.
My. That's personal.
Yes, sir.
That's possessive. You see?
Yes, sir.
My Jesus is alive. Now, the minister is a man that has taught me and taught us and has openly stated, especially to black community and religious and leaders, he hates division. And we have seen the impact of what the enemy has done to divide brothers and sisters,
yes,
along religious lines,
yes, sir,
along affiliations politically, fraternities and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a note, he received a high honor on Saturday from Omega Psi Phi.
Mm-hmm.
They gave him the Founder's Robe. And they gave him the Lifetime Achievement Award. And in that message, he said something that shocked many that day. He said, I'm a Christian. Ain't the first time he said that. He said, now, Farrakhan, how are you a Christian? I thought you was a Muslim. He said, I'm a Muslim, too. And I'm a Jew. So the question becomes, the context in which he's talking about is the power of the Word of God that raised him up.
Mm-hmm.
He knows for a fact that his Redeemer liveth, because the Jesus that he's talking about is not the Jesus that is normally represented to us.
No, no.
In many forms, you know.
Yes, sir.
We can debate the issue of the color of Jesus.
No, well, right? Not. We can't.
Not,
we're not going
to.
Right.
These are issues in the religious debate.
Yes, sir.
So he's talking about the spiritual life and the spiritual energy that he has come through as a student and representative of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the price that he has to pay. And let's be clear, the devil that he's talking about is not a spook devil, not a red man with pantyhose on and pitchfork.
No, he's not.
The price that he's willing to pay and has to pay is what this government has plotted and planned against him since he resurrected the work of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad 40 years ago, starting 40 years ago. So this is not the first. I'll close with this. Go and implore YouTube. Use the platform and go back to 1994 under the subject, Why I Preach Jesus, from First Iconium Baptist Church in Atlanta under the great Reverend Timothy McDonald, a great friend of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Go back to St. Sabina's Catholic Church in Chicago on the south side under a white pastor, Father Michael Flager.
Yes, sir.
Yes, a great man who has been a great friend and is still a great friend of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, where he has taught on the power of Christ. The minister in 1983, early in the development of rebuilding this work, went on a tour throughout this country under the theme, Christ's Imminent Return. So I think that the context to what that clip has done and what many Christian publications have used, again, to spark the question, but it creates more division. I close with this, Brother Sean, and you know this history. This brother of ours, this beautiful man,
yes, sir,
an inspiration in 1994 at an all-men's meeting, said, I want to take 1 million black men to Washington,
yeah,
D.C. And the minister said, when that went out of his mouth, he said he wished he could have pulled it back. He said, but he couldn't, and we went to work. And God blessed us as men to come to that mall. Almost 2 million showed up,
yes, sir,
and the reports were that 85 to 90% of those brothers said that they were Christians.
Yeah.
Let's raise the question minister raised. Could he have done that without the permission and the power of the God of us all?
No,
God that we use as the device of, well, the Muslims got one God, the Christians got another God, the Jews got another God, but Christianity, Islam, and Judaism all claim Abraham as their father. And the scripture says that Abraham was neither a Christian nor a Jew. He was an upright man. So I'm just laying that out in the sense that it's all context in which the minister was saying that.
Amen, brother.
Yes,
I mean, you bring back the Million Man March. I was there, of course. And I tell you, and this is I'm gonna make it as transparent as possible. That was even before I was saved, Minister Carlos.
Come on.
And I tell you, on that day, and I know there was at least 1 million other brothers who probably can say the same thing. I was changed.
Yes, sir.
Just by the sheer spiritual energy that was created on that day. And I'm glad the minister didn't pull it back into his mouth, because it was a transformative and transcendent time in the history of black people, black men in this country, that day where we had to come. And, you know, it was a redemptive day, quite frankly, to coin the phrase.
Yeah. And look at the power of that.
Absolutely.
The minister didn't come out to proselytize Islam. No, and let's look at it. Let's be real. Many imams, many Christian preachers, had they had that opportunity, they would not have said, go join a spiritual house of your choice that best addresses your need.
Yeah.
Go join an organization. He could have easily said, I want everybody to join the Nation of Islam, because that man thinks for the whole. And so the reflective power of what Christ is and what Christ stands for is this. Does Christ think for a little small group, or does Christ think for the whole?
Yeah.
Did the prophets of God think for little small groups only, or did they think for the whole, the bigger picture? You're right, Brother Sean. We cannot be Muslims and not respect and honor all the prophets of God. But there is a difference between Jesus the prophet and Jesus the Christ.
Yeah.
See, so when we're talking about the prophet Jesus of 2,000 years ago, that was a work that he did, but that prophet spoke of one coming after him that would be in the same spirit of him. And this is Christ risen and ascended above prophethood. See? So that's a religious situation, but I want us to know and understand that as Muslims, we are not Muslims and don't recognize Jesus. I'll close with this. Now, look at the division in religion. When our fathers were brought here to the shores of America to be made slaves, we didn't speak English.
No.
We didn't write English.
No.
But we believed in Jesus. The majority of the slaves were from West Africa. They were Muslims, but they knew Jesus, and they knew the name. Now, isn't it ironic that for 300 years, we were kept away from the Bible, locked out of the Bible, and could not be allowed to worship God in the best of our ability in the open without paying a price?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the same slave master that denied us religion spoon-fed us a reinterpreted version of Christianity that made us weak and powerless. See? So when you look at Marcus Garvey, when you look at Noble Drew Ali, when you look at the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Dr. King and Malcolm X, this is the God of us all moving that program. So the Honorable Minister Farrakhan has had a task for the past 40 years to do what? Resurrect the nation of Islam, because the enemy attempted to write the name of Elijah Muhammad and his work out. So you don't see us. We're not raised up to be divisive. We work with our Christian family. We work with our community leaders. When we go out in the street, Brother Sean, do you think that our poor brothers and sisters who are out there in poverty, our little young brothers who we're trying to stop from pulling the trigger, care whether or not we come with the star and crescent or the cross or the six-pointed star? Listen, black preacher. Listen, religious leaders. Listen, imams. How could you have the redemptive spirit of the prophet of God and then act like some of our brothers in ignorance that are claiming gang sets? Here we come. I'm star and crescent. I'm Star of David. I'm the cross. And we're like the, I'm a blood. I'm a crip. I'm a this. I'm a that. No. The Quran says we make no distinction among any of the prophets or messengers of God and the revelations that they brought. So when we go out to save people, we have to be willing to look at the bigger picture and stop worrying about our little cubbyhole where we like to get up and preach because we've made that our world.
Got you. Got you 100%.
I know that was a lot. I'm sorry.
No,
brother.
You don't have to apologize, Minister Carlos. You know that. And I'm in agreement with everything that you said, quite frankly. I wanted to open the phone lines, but before I do, I think we have another piece of sound that we want to play real quick, and then we'll talk on the other side.
Sure.
All right.
Jesus never preached Christianity. Listen, if I upset you, I'm not trying to upset you, but Christianity is a white man's made-up religion. Wait a minute. Where did Christianity start? Didn't start where Jesus was teaching. What was the Council of Nice like, where a Nicene Creed was evolved in 325 A.D.? Who gave you the cross? Who taught you that the cross was your salvation? Jesus didn't say that. Constantine had a vision one night. Constantine was a white man who became Caesar of Rome. He had a vision. And in that vision, he saw a cross with these Latin words under it, in hoc signo vinces, meaning with this sign, we conquer. So the white man came, gave you the Bible, gave you the cross, conquered your land, took your resources, and took your mind.
Well.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, man. It's as real as it gets.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to let people know, listening, and YouTube, Minister Carlos, that the editing that you heard was not editing out any of what the minister said. It was just compressing his statements because he has long gaps of time, and just for the sake of radio and time, we did that.
The beauty was I was actually sitting there when he said it. I was sitting right in the second row.
So
right
you can fact. So you can fact check this. You can fact check this.
Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
But the point is, and to this point of this news that we're bringing forward, even though it was this was an event that took place in July, on July 30th at the Union Temple Baptist Church, Willie Wilson's church. This is not, again, as we started the conversation, Minister Carlos, this is not a new phenomena. The minister has been preaching on Jesus since the beginning.
Yes, sir. Yeah. And when we look at that clip, now that last clip that was played was from his message last Sunday at Mas Maryam, where he spoke in Chicago. And what the minister was running down in that clip was, again, something that I touched just briefly a few minutes ago in terms of the language. We didn't come here using the language Christian. Christian is an English term. But what he said was Jesus never claimed to be a Christian. If we looked in the Gospels of Jesus, we could never find Jesus using the word one time. Is Christian a bad name? Absolutely not. However, the enemy that gave us the Bible and gave us this made-up religion that he called Christianity was used as a shield, using the good name of Jesus as a shield for their dirty practice of religion. Isn't it ironic that George Washington said he was a Christian?
Oh, well, Lord.
See, isn't it ironic that the founding fathers all said that they were Christians, but yet they had slaves? Isn't it ironic that the legislators, Henry Clay, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Lee family, since we're talking about statues, yeah. All of these were, quote-unquote, proud Christians and Bible-toting Christians, but yet they did not even respect us as human beings.
No.
See? The Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah.
Burned
the cross
to the day.
Truth.
Say that they are Christian knights. Under this. Now, Prophet Muhammad never burned the cross. Elijah Muhammad never burned the cross. We have never gone and desecrated a church in the name of Islam. So we should take a look at our own history to know that it was Christian police commissioners in Arkansas and Christian governors in Alabama and in Louisiana that sit four-legged dogs on our people and use the municipality of the fire department that should have been putting out fires, but they were spraying us down all because we wanted to go to the bathroom in the same location as white people.
Yeah.
Look at the hypocrisy, Sean.
Well, it is breathtaking, and if Minister Farrakhan said he had some things to answer for, God knows those quote unquote white evangelicals or white Christians or however you want to characterize them, they have much bigger things to answer for.
But let's be clear, what the minister's saying, the price he gotta pay is with white people who don't want him to continue to preach. Sad, I close on this note. You know what? Envy and jealousy is a hell of a disease of the heart.
Brother.
And for all of these weak ones that claim you love Jesus, I'm saying it straight up to you today. You just keep sitting on the sideline waiting for the minister to die. But you got to understand that Farrakhan is down into the unborn generations. You sitting on the sideline. He's 84 now. What's going to happen to the nation? Because some of you in your ignorance misunderstand the mission that we all have to save our people because you say that black men won't join the church because of the nation. That's sickening to me. The real, true black Christian, strong black brothers and sisters and these strong black Christian preachers are beautiful men and women of God that are doing the work. It is only you that are using Jesus' good name to shield your dirty practice of religion, and that's the price you're going to have to pay with black people when they find out that you've been faking the funk.
Mm. Well, Brother Minister, I needed some church in the middle of the week anyway. So, Minister Carlos Muhammad, man, you know, much respect and love to you.
Likewise, Sean.
I appreciate you taking time to help us walk through this. With respect.
Yes, sir.
Baltimore representative of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam, Minister Carlos Muhammad. Carlos, always great pleasure
you,
to
man.
Hear you. Love you too, brother.
And I'll be in touch about that show we're going to do with the Honorable Minister.
I'll be there, Carlos.
Yes, sir. Peace.
All right, brother. Peace to you. All right, we're going to take a break. We don't have time to get on to doing phone calls. I would have been interested to hear what some people had to think, but at the same time, I think I think we aired it out pretty good, and I appreciate Minister Carlos taking time to help us walk through what the Minister Louis Farrakhan had to say. He is his representative here in Baltimore, so if we can't get the minister himself, I'll rock with Minister Carlos Muhammad. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll begin the second hour of First Edition. It's all about film. Our friends from the Parkway Theater and the Maryland Film Festival are here talking about this film, Davion, as well as the Rat film, Eric Hatch from the Parkway, as well as we're going to talk to brother Marco the Answer Johnson, who's making a new film called The Legend of Kung Funk, all about avant-garde films in the second hour of First Edition. Stay tuned.